All right, welcome to Wednesday. Man, the Memorial Day holiday got me all screwed up. Hopefully everybody's having a great day. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and you're watching Chicago Music Revealed, episode 42. That's right. We've been doing this Monday through Friday every day, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on all of the different platforms we have, trying to connect the community, not only in Chicago, but from around the world. So we've had a lot of different guests, a lot of different artists on the show. And of course, you can see all of those past interviews at chicagomusicrevealed.com and chicagojazz.com. And we are actually getting ready to put up a live streaming calendar on chicagojazz.com. So if you have shows, you have anything we should be aware of, hit us up, leave us a comment, send us some email, and we will be sure to get all of that set up. Also, I should make sure everyone knows the end of all my plugs here. I'm also the director of programming and entertainment at the soon-to-be-opening-up Epiphany Center for the Arts right there at 201 South Ashland Avenue. You will be hearing more about our upcoming performance schedule for the fall. Fingers crossed, nothing changes on that end. And, everybody's aware of the situation, so we're going to play it by ear right now. But we're scheduling things out, so stay tuned for that. EpiphanyShy.com for all of that information. Now, today on the show, I'm excited. I've been checking out this new release by Bobby Salvaggio and killing sax player. Obviously, he's played with everybody, and he and I could talk probably for 4 hours about his career. We've got him on the phone right now. Bobby, how are you?
Mike, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, sir.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to talking to you about this. We talked a little bit before you came on, and we'll talk a little bit about your career, about the different people you've studied with and obviously performed with. But let's focus straight in off the bat here. You've got this new release. It just came out, I think, in February, if I saw that correctly.
Absolutely.
Live from the Bop Stop, which is in Cleveland, if I did my homework correctly.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and
it is.
I'm going to preface this, too, and those people in Chicago that remember this, there used to be a place in Chicago called the Bop Shop. So,
Yes, I remember that
you?
Place.
Okay, yeah. So when I misspeak and I call it the Bop Shop, I'm just warning everyone ahead of time here.
That's funny.
But those are the people that watch the show all the time know that, I'm just a drummer with a video camera and a magazine, and that's all I can do for you. So, all right, let's talk about this. So this is your 11th release as a leader, but it's your first live recording, which I find fascinating because you would figure that over the course of your career, something would have been put out from one of your live performances. How did you first conceive of doing this live? And then I want to talk about, all of the different things that go into actually planning a live performance. So how did you conceive of doing this live?
Yeah, it's funny. I've probably the past 4 or 5 records, I've been thinking, man, I need to do a live record. And it just didn't work out. The people I had on the records that I wanted to play with and the types of projects, they weren't really right for a live record. Mm-hmm. And, like, for example, my last record, Quantum Man, with a string quintet and the jazz quartet and voice and percussion, it just was so mammoth. It just didn't set up for a live record. And I just was honestly just said to myself, enough, I need to do a live record. The Bop Stop ended up being the perfect place. This is the third version of the club for the people that know the Bop Stop and know Cleveland, a kind of jazz venue history. And this place, Gabe Pollock, who manages it now, has done an absolutely fabulous job of not only supporting the local scene, but bringing in, pretty big names, everybody from Dave Liebman to Plus, and on and on, and the club was built specifically for jazz music, and he's got a great recording equipment, sound system, It just was the ideal situation. And so, quite honestly, it just was like, okay, here we go, live record time.
Well, you know, I got to believe, and also, I mean, this recording, you have a majority original composition on here.
Yes.
And then I think if I looked at it correctly, I heard Blackbird on here, but I think that might be the only one on here that's not an original composition, right?
Yes.
Okay, so planning a live performance, then not only that, but it's not just you with a, you know, with a trio, so it's not just a quartet. Then you also have on a couple of tunes an actual woodwind quartet that join you on stage, and then you have a couple of other special guests. I mean, I know what it goes into, like planning a performance and putting it together, and just with a quartet, let alone planning a live performance with a quartet, packing the club, worrying about all of that, and then all of the recording situations and everything. But then you've got like a woodwind quartet coming on stage. You've got special guests. I mean, what was the planning process behind this? Did you not care because you're like, you know what, I'm going to do this from start to finish. This is the way we're going to record it. And it is what it is. Or was there there's a lot of moving parts on this recording to do it live.
I wanted to do something other than just a quartet. I mean, I've done a lot of records of, you know, I've really only done two of the 11 records where it was just quartet stuff. It's either been quartet or multiple people on the record. And I just didn't want to do, let's just put up a quartet, play some tunes and go. All my records, I do mostly original music. I've done a couple covers and arrangements of like a Stevie Wonder tune on a record and a Police tune, and then the Blackbird Beatles tune on this one. But, you know, mostly I write original music. And so, I wanted to do something different. A couple of the tunes that have the what I kind of call my brass wind quartet with flugel, clarinet, horn, and bassoon, which is such a weird combination, but it was I just was looking for a sound that would match kind of this ECM flavor of the two tunes in particular that I wanted to use that on. And it was really as simple as that. I just was looking for colors. And then, of course, a good friend of mine and other, you know, kind of local Northeast Ohio musician, Dan Wilson on guitar, a couple things. So, you know, that was really the first thing, was just thinking what kind of colors, what kind of sounds do I want to go with? And then honestly, logistically, I didn't worry about it. I knew I had the right club in mind. I had the right people in mind. It was literally, I mean, I'm not even joking when I say it was a 14-hour day. We went in first thing in the morning, and I wanted to be from the beginning, even though, you know, I had to play, but, you know, a good friend of mine, Ian Anderson, that did the recording. We went in the morning, first thing. I helped him load everything in. There's a picture probably on Facebook somewhere of the stage setup, and it was insane. I mean, we really did it. I wanted as good a quality as possible, but like the freedom still to just kind of play and not worry about stuff. Yep. So, you know, logistically, we set it up so that we did certain things, certain sets. Like the first set, I had all the guests that were going to play on the first set. So we started the first two tunes we did with the brass wind quartet, so that they just came up to start with. And after the first two tunes, they were done and they didn't have to worry about coming back up. And then I had Dan Wilson come up on a couple tunes, and then we finished the first set just quartet, and then just the quartet. So we did kind of go in logistically with a plan, so that people weren't coming up and going down. When they were playing, I wanted them on stage playing. When they were done for the night. They didn't have to worry about it. And so we set everything up. The people came in, all the musicians came in the afternoon. We did a long sound check, obviously, to make sure, you know, you get it. You know, doing a live record, you gotta, I mean, make sure everything is just ready to go. You don't want to lose anything. And then we played the gig that night. It was great. Sold out house, and, you know, was exhausting by the end, but we got through it, man. You know, for just, you know, first takes on everything, and,
yep.
you know, just played a lot. It was just fun to just play it like it was a gig and not worry about anything.
That's the, I mean, you had to get to the point where you could just play it as a gig, obviously. So there's a lot of prep time, you know, but, you know, I find that the live recording, I mean, I'm, you know, obviously a fan of quality and production and all that, and making sure the artist compositions are done the way the artist wants them. So that's why, you know, being in a studio obviously lends itself to that. But boy, there's something about that energy, the live recordings. And I mean, I could listen to, you know, live recordings from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. You hear that energy even back then.
Absolutely.
And translating now, especially with modern technology, with the way everything can be recorded. I mean, that energy is something you just can't replace when you're in a studio and then you're playing original compositions. So I got to believe that a lot of the stuff that you're playing, this was actually the truest form of what that composition, what you really envisioned for that composition to sound like, because it was live and the energy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'm very fortunate and have been for years in Northeast Ohio. I mean, this is, my wife and I are from here, that, you know, we've made this our home because it is our home. And, you know, we lived in New York City for a little bit and wanted to come home because we're comfortable here. We're very fortunate that there are just unbelievable musicians in town, just like everywhere. You know, there are just so many great musicians. To digress for 1 second, I mean, I remember coming back from New York, and I don't know if you're hip to Dan Wall, great piano and organist, right? On all those John Abercrombie Organ Trio stuff. Yep. And Dan and his wife, Carol, have lived in Northeast Ohio for years. He teaches at Oberlin. And my first record I ever did, you know, 20 plus years ago, a record I put up myself has Dan Wall on it. You know, I mean, and so, you know, we take advantage of what we have. My quartet comes on this record are musicians that I've played a lot with, played this music a lot. And so, you know, we were able to truly free ourselves and just play. And so that idea of being able to play with energy, because it's not like we were playing music we hadn't played before. It's not like we know each other. It's just, we just like ripped everything away and just were able to go for it. And then you add into that, and we didn't find out really to that day. We knew we were going to have a really good crowd. And by the time we got to the beginning of the gig, it was sold out and standing room only. And so you add all that together, and you're right. The energy level was out of the building, man. And it was just so much fun. So much fun.
Yeah. I mean, and it comes through on the recording, you know. So just to remind everybody, we're talking to Bobby Salvaggio. He's got the new recording live from the Bop Stop, and it's out on Dot Time Records. We ought to tell him that. And of course, we'll link everything up at BobbySalvaggio.com. We'll send everybody over there, and I'm sure dot time records.com, I think, is the website for them as well. I'll send them over there too to check it out. But, you know, it's interesting, and listening to the compositions, I'm always curious, because somebody that's an accomplished as you are, you're also the director of jazz studies at Kent State University, which you graduated from, and then you went to Manhattan School of Music and you studied with like some incredible musicians, legendary musicians, Joe Lovano, Bobby Watson, just to name a few, in New York. When you sit down to compose, and this is always something that I'm curious about, is, you know, do you start with a theme? Do you start with a melody? Especially somebody that's composing, I'm assuming, I don't know, maybe you're composing on a piano, but with a saxophone, I mean, you're starting with a melody and put harmonics underneath it, or how does that process work for you when you get into the composition realm?
Man, that's a great question. The start with is this, and what I always tell my students that you know, take my jazz comp and arranging class, is the first thing I always tell them is let the music tell you where it wants to go. Unless you're composing, like, you know, like say you're hired by Hal Leonard to write a stock high school big band chart that has these things in it because they need to learn how to do it.
Right.
Unless you're doing something like that, music will always tell you where it wants to go. And I mean that total, you know, holistically. And so for me, I don't have one approach, and I bet you a lot of people would say this same thing if they really, you know, got into it, is that first, you know, as a saxophone player, I rarely compose on a saxophone, mostly because when you're hearing music, it doesn't matter what instrument I do it on. I'm not hearing it differently because I'm playing my saxophone. I hear what I hear. Mm-hmm. I compose at the piano because I can orchestrate and compose at the same time. I don't have to kind of go back and forth. So I do compose, you know, 99.9% of the time at the piano. It just depends. Sometimes it depends on the project. Sometimes it depends on the vibe of the tune. Sometimes it depends on what I hear. I've composed about every way you can think of. I've started with the melody. I've started with a chord progression. I've started with a groove. I've started with a bass line. It depends. I'll tell you, for, you know, one of my projects, my grassroots movement project, which is more of kind of like an electric, you know, jazz project, I tend to write the bass lines first because that outlines, you know, the groove, it outlines the feel, it really kind of lets me, you know, hear where I want the melody and everything else to go.
Mm-hmm.
For this record, the Live from the Bop Stop, a couple of the tunes were older tunes, but the majority of the original stuff was fairly newer, and probably with those tunes, I did more of the first and let the melody develop and then let the harmony come from where the, like, for example, the first two tunes are they're not whole diatonic, but mostly diatonic melodies. And I did that on purpose because I was trying to experiment with simple melodies in a very diatonic way, and then using chromatic and more dense harmony over very diatonic melodies. And so the melodies kind of came first, and then I went through harmonizing it in ways that just how I was hearing things. And so it really depends on the project and where what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's always a process, you know. It's always very interesting to me to ask that question to somebody that does this type of composition and is writing and obviously has been doing it for years, because I think it's interesting for people to understand the process. So when they hear the final version of it, then they understand sort of the concept and where you are coming from. So I find it fascinating. Yeah. when we're talking about that stuff. Let's talk a little bit about your background too. I mean, so you graduated from Kent State University, went to New York, and what drew you back to the Cleveland area?
Well, again, Cleveland does have a pretty rich history of jazz music. I mean, you already brought up, you know, one of the great, you know, jazz players, Joe Lovano.
Yep.
And you know, it just has a rich history of music. And so I feel very fortunate to have grown up as a musician. My father was a great jazz accordion player and piano player, you know, 19, you know, out on the road touring with Guy Lombardo's big band, man.
Wow.
So, you know, and so,
that's awesome.
I grew up around musicians in this area. And so, I truly love Northeast Ohio. You know, my wife and mine, all our families here, you know, a lot of my closest friends are here. And I love this area. It's very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if it is the biggest, but one of the largest, like, metro park and hiking areas, infrastructure, in the, and so, yeah, it's beautiful. There's some beautiful hiking and, you know, just outdoor areas here in Northeast Ohio. And so, you know, when we moved to New York, obviously I wanted to experience that, that 90s New York scene was actually a pretty important scene. That can be a whole nother discussion we could get into. But, you know, it was a very important scene. I mean, a lot of the bigger name musicians that you hear today, from, you know, Mel Dow to Chris Potter to Kurt Rosenwinkel and on, came out of that 90s New York scene. And I didn't really quite realize it to the extent that I do now, per se, but I did realize that there was something really serious going on. And so it just timed it perfectly. When I graduated with my undergrad, I wanted to get my master's, I moved to New York. Mm-hmm. And so that just kind of, you know, led me to that place. The reality was that I wanted to move back. And here's the biggest reason why, more than anything else. I feel that for this music, speaking of jazz music, to move forward, you have to have people that want to move the music forward, evolve them creatively in other places other than the big names like New York or Chicago. Mm-hmm. You have to have people that want to create new music, that want to collaborate, that want to move the music forward everywhere. And I care deeply about the area I live in, Northeast Ohio, Cleveland and Akron in particular. And I felt that I could make a difference. And I would like to think that I have made a big difference in this area in moving the music forward. And now there's a spotlight on Northeast Ohio. Great musicians doing some great new music. And, you know, there are some really happening things here. And so that to me is why I wanted to come back here, was to really help the scene move forward.
Well, that's incredible that you wanted to, you know, come back and help out your, you know, basically your hometown and get things happening there. But, you know, I mean, now you're director of jazz studies at Kent State University, and mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of musicians that are coming through your program are like, oh man, I'm going to go to New York. I'm a big believer nowadays, and even maybe a little bit in the 90s, but like what you said, I think the 90s were still one of those things that you needed to be in the scene. But I think mm-hmm. nowadays there's enough of these musicians that are moving out of New York and traveling around the country that you can develop enough connections. And it's really, what, from Chicago to New York, it's 2 hours on a plane and you're there, you know, it's right. Not a big deal. And there's all the connections and stuff that you're doing online and everything else. I mean, what are you seeing nowadays? What are you telling your students? I mean, do you think that they need to move somewhere like New York? Do you think they can still really create what they want to create and expand their career staying in Cleveland or staying in Chicago or staying in some place like that and being able to jump over to New York and hang out there for a couple of weeks, know people, get the connections happening, right. Talking to people, and then come back home and still have a success?
Yeah, that's another great question. And I think we in the jazz community are mostly on the same page. I mean, of course, no disrespect to any of my New York, you know, peeps or anything like that. There are some people that probably would say, nah, you got to move to New York. Right. But I tell you what I tell my students and what I've told some of the musicians that are, you know, now in their 30s creating their own things that I was very thankful to mentor and still be a part of their lives, is that you don't need to live in a city like New York to be successful. You need to go experience it in some way, because New York is unique. There's no doubt. And it is important. I tell my students that, you know, when they're getting ready to graduate, if they want to do their master's, I recommend certain schools in New York or even Chicago to an extent, because the size of cities like New York and Chicago, it's much more extensive than what you can have in a Northeast Ohio, just from a networking standpoint, the amount of people. But I tell them at that point, if you're going to go spend time in a big city like that, this is the time to do it. But don't feel like you have to be pressured to live in that big city to be successful. Be okay coming back home. And, you know, I think that's made a difference. Speaking of Northeast Ohio, there are just some beautiful musicians. Theron Brown's one, Chris Coles is another one, Sam Blakesley's another one, although Sam had moved to New York recently, but spent many, many years in Northeast Ohio, mm-hmm. that and many others that kind of decided to, you know, Dave Wilson actually is another one that decided to Northeast Ohio, where they grew up, their home base, and stay here. And in part, you know, I would hopefully like to think that some of my mentoring to them helped them decide that. And I'm telling you, that is what has helped the scene really, really grow. You know, because when I moved back from New York, I mean, there's a lot of great musicians in Northeast Ohio. There weren't a ton of people doing new music. There weren't a ton of people writing original, new, creative, modern jazz music. And so, you know, I was one of really the only ones kind of doing that in the late 90s and early 2000s when I moved. Now, these musicians that I mentored and said, you know, you don't have to move away. You can create a scene here. And we've kind of done that. And I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world. And that's what I tell musicians. That's what I tell my young kids. You know, experience as much as you can possibly can, because New York isn't the only place either.
Right.
You know, go to Chicago, go to LA, go to New Orleans, go to Kansas City, go to Europe, mm-hmm. go to Canada, go to Toronto. I mean, you know, you want to experience as much as you possibly can, which is really kind of how I've approached it. And the more you can do that, you're going to get everything that you need to figure out who you are. And when you do that, it doesn't matter where you live. And as a matter of fact, the point we've kind of been making is, it'll actually help jazz music and the scene as a whole if we all, you know, kind of, you know, make home bases in our hometowns and we expand the understanding of what this music is to the general audience. That's what's really going to move this music forward, not everybody moving to New York City and playing.
Yeah. No, I that's a great answer. And I love the fact of the way you're thinking. And I love the fact that I think you've made a huge difference, right, in your area. I mean, give me a break. And the way that you're describing this whole thing makes a ton of sense. And there's a lot of people here in Chicago that have done the same thing. They've moved back from
Absolutely.
New York and they've created quite a scene, and it's all grown. I mean, you know,
I know some of those musicians, there's some great musicians in Chicago I've had the pleasure of working with, and I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's incredible, especially in this day and age with the internet and the fact that you can in 2 hours be pretty much anywhere you need to be on a plane.
Oh,
I mean, you know,
man.
It doesn't.
Absolutely.
All right. So we're talking to Bobby Salvaggio, his new release, Live from the Bop Stop, available on Dot Time Records, and of course, BobbySalvaggio.com. We'll link all that stuff up. I've got to have you back on the show at some point. We're going to talk about the 90s and the New York scene, because I didn't even think of that, but I mean, yeah, all those guys that came out of
the history books haven't quite caught up to that yet, where they really go in detail about that, but yeah. I'm telling you, man, that was an incredible, the important point in that 90s New York scene.
Yeah. Well, and you were in the middle of it, but just like, you know, a lot of us, when I'm in the middle of something, or you don't really realize it completely until you leave. And then like 5 years later, you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
What was happening there? So, I mean, you know, it's really interesting, but I never thought of that, but that's right. All those guys were coming out, yourself included. I mean, it's an incredible scene and everything that was going on. So, well, I'll have to have you back on so we can talk about that. We'll dedicate
Please.
A show to some jazz history and circle around the world. And I'll recontact with you on that one. But
anytime, man, anytime.
You know, hey, congratulations on this new recording. I love it. I encourage everybody to go check it out. I mean, I just love the creativity. I love the energy from the live performance and just the band and everybody, how everybody's working together on this. It's a really exciting listen, and I encourage everybody to check it out.
Man, Mike, thank you so much, man. That means a ton.
Well, I appreciate you jumping on today, Bobby. It was great to connect with you. And how are you holding up during the COVID-19 situation? There isn't much performances going on. I'm assuming you had to put everybody to finish off the semester at Kent State, probably online, right? And do the Zoom lessons and stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, my family's doing well. Thank you. I hope all of you are doing good too. Yep. It's been a challenge. I'll speak about the education and then briefly about, as director of jazz studies, it's a full-time gig and I play and full-time too. Yeah. And so it gets a little busy, but during this time that it was very challenging. I remember when it all came down, we were in school, it was the middle of the day, the word came out, everybody has to go home.
Wow, in the middle of the day.
3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was getting ready for a rehearsal in a couple hours from then, and, just kind of going through some administration stuff, and the email went out, texts went out, everybody was out in the hallways, and what's going on, this or that, and it's like, yeah. And that was, the last time I was at school, and that was, wow. Beginning of March, yeah. So we just, I'll be honest, other than some private lessons, I've not done a ton of online teaching. Which I think a lot of us would say we hadn't done a lot of online teaching. And so it was just a very short amount of time to learn a big curve, mm-hmm. What to do. And so, on the ensembles were, anybody that teaches understands that their ensembles that was basically decimated for the end of the year. I basically, just from a logistical standpoint and, our students and what they can and can't do, I basically just had to give them some research and transcribing, playing assignments, we maybe another time we into what we're planning for the fall, because it's going to be different. We're going to do some individuals recording and piecing together things of ensembles and all that, but so that was a huge for the end of the semester, but we got through it. Kids were great and we got through it. I have, as I said from the start, I'm incredible. My wife and I are salaried people, so it didn't quite hit us that hard financially, because, I lost tons of gigs, good paying gigs. I had a couple festivals, a couple high school festivals, promoting the record, that kind of stuff, and even though I still lost a whole lot of gigs, yeah. And I one of the things that I tried to do early on is I did like a couple little live stream things. I did a little fundraiser thing to benefit students. My musician friends that aren't as fortunate to have.
Uh-oh, did I lose you? I think I might have just lost you, Bobby. You're there?
Hear me?
Oh, there you are. Yeah, you've been breaking up a little bit, but then you always come right back every once in a while. But that one went away for a while.
All right, sorry. Can you hear me now, though?
Yeah, you okay. Sound good. Yep.
Yeah. So we've just as a community trying to come together and helping the musicians that it really has hit hard as much as we can. And other than that, we're healthy, we're safe, we're doing okay, and we're trying to help everybody around us as much as we possibly can. I can say my wife and I personally, we had just moved into a new house. I mean, literally, like the week before everything went down and all the quarantining stuff and mm-hmm. staying in your homes and all that. Literally the week before that, my wife and I moved into a new house.
Wow.
And so, And so, to be honest with you, we had a little work to do, and so we've painted the whole inside. I've built a patio out back. I just built yesterday a patio out front. So we've been staying and finishing the semester and some little kind of music project and some writing stuff. I've actually stayed incredibly, to be honest with you, more busy than I've really kind of wanted to be. But and I say that, I know some people are struggling with things, and so we're very fortunate. We've been good, and I really think a lot about some of my musician friends and students in particular that are, in their own, place in an apartment. And, like for example, my boy, Julian, and his girlfriend, they're living in an apartment, and so we're always checking up. And it's, people like that that we're just trying to keep in touch with and help out as much as possible.
Well, that's the main thing. And like I've talked to every musician I've had on the show, and I think you'll agree. I mean, there's been the economic downturn in 2008, but there was still work. There was still something happening. This
Oh
is
yeah.
the wrong industry for a pandemic because it's like
Oh
you
man.
have to shut it all down. And to your point, I mean, how many festivals are just canceled? And that's right now in the summer. I mean, regardless of what genre of music you're playing, this is the big festival time for everybody, and
Yep.
they're all closed. And so it's a whole new world out there, and I don't see a lot of this changing for quite a while. So I think we're all going to be kind of going through the new territory here of the virtual world and figuring out how to make music and be creative. And it's going to be one of those things that's I think going to shape the entertainment industry. But I think
Yes.
that the people that figure it out and can capitalize on things will probably come out the other side with a larger audience potentially, and other ways to distribute music and be creative. That always happens during something horrible like this.
I mean, it's you to kind of use a stereotypical type phrase, looking for the silver lining, type thing. And it's kind of a bad way to look at, because people are suffering. But there are some silver linings. I mean, people having to figure out how to do things online, how to live stream, how to be creative in this way, I think is going to better the scene overall when things start to normalize. I think there are good things about help strengthen the scene. Another thing too, and I don't know if this will happen or not, but I was talking with somebody yesterday, about this, and they were asking about, do you see, what things do you think will help better the scene when you come out of this? And I hope that, you understand this as a musician. Sometimes the venues are booking agents and musicians, and sometimes we kind of clash at times. Very brief, have a whole another discussion about, but hopefully this time away it will help each side kind of take a second to breathe and appreciate each other. Even though, times that the musicians, we have valid points, I think sometimes we forget though that, venues and the agents and the venue owners and that they do have a lot on their plates. There's a lot of things that they have to deal with, and even if we're not always getting what we feel we deserve, there are aspects of what they do and what they have to deal with that sometimes we forget about, and maybe it will help us to view what they have to go. Same thing from their aspect, the venue owner, that second to really think and understand how important we as musicians are to them, and the respect, some that can kind of go back and forth. And I hope that, all that kind of angst that sometimes we, as musicians and venues kind of have against each other, that this time apart really gets us to really hopefully understand each other a little better, respect each other a little better, and how much we really need each other to be successful.
Yep. 100%. You're preaching to the choir here. I just took on a role, and not to, you know, pontificate here, but I just took on a role. I'm the program director and entertainment director at Epiphany Center for the Arts. There's three venues there.
And, beautiful. Congrats.
So the musician, thanks. The musician working as the talent buyer now. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of different musicians, all different genres that I know. And I'm like, look, we're all going to have to work together here because, you know, this is completely different. So I think it's going to reshape a lot of stuff. And to your point, I totally agree. I think there's a lot of stuff on both sides that I think everybody's going to start to look at a lot differently. And if everybody starts working together more and understanding where everybody's at and just trying to get even and then, you know, be successful, I think it's good for the long-term health of the industry, although I think we're going to lose a lot of clubs here in the process. So I think that's going to be a problem too, you know. So
it could be, but I do hope in the long run that, again, there's that mutual respect and understanding of what each side needs to be successful. You know, I'm hoping that this time apart gives us a chance to kind of move more towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, well, definitely. Well, we've always got to look on the silver lining. I'm glad your family and yourself are safe, healthy, and you guys are doing okay during this whole situation. And hopefully sometime sooner rather than later, we'll see you actually up here in Chicago in person performing somewhere. That would be exciting.
Yeah, it's been a couple years. I mean, I've done things at Andy's and the Green Mill and that, and some good John Cowards, a good friend, and some friends up there that like Dan Bruce, who's now here, lived in Chicago forever. Yeah. And, you know, man, all, you know, Matt Ullery, all these cats, man, you know, and so.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see you up here. But in the meantime, I'm not kidding. I'll hit you up in the next couple months because I would love to just have a conversation about the scene in New York in the 90s, how you came up through it and all of the different cats and where you see all of that and how that influenced jazz as we're dealing with it now. You know, so, I mean, that's a long conversation that I didn't want to go down that wormhole because we'd be on the phone for another 2 hours.
I mean, there's so many cats. I mean, who I like, you know, Dick Oates, who I studied with, Bobby Watson, you know, playing, you know, I was very fortunate to have some time playing, you know, subbing on the Vanguard band when I lived in New York, and guys like Billy Drews and all of those, Rich Perry, you know, Gary Simoleon, all those cats in the sax section. Yeah. I mean, it's
unreal. You know,
yeah. There's some stuff, man.
Well, congratulations on the new recording, and man, I appreciate you jumping on today. It was great to connect with you. I really appreciate it.
Mike, my absolute pleasure, man. Thank you. This is a beautiful thing, and I'd be happy to do it anytime.
Awesome. All right. Have a good night. Have a good weekend, and stay safe. Thanks, Bobby.
You too, Mike. Thanks, man.
All right. All right. Bobby Salvaggio. I'm telling you guys should go check this out. BobbySalvaggio.com. Go hit that up. Dot Time Records, this new recording live from the Bop Stop. What a great interview. We had a little bit of phone things back and forth, but right when I was going to stop, then it would come back. So, you know, I think we heard like 99%. I think he's incredible. He's got some great stories, great information. Hopefully everybody had a good time listening to that. You know, this whole point of Chicago Music Revealed that we're doing this Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time is not only to reveal Chicago music to the world, but also revealed music from all around the world, all different genres, to the Chicago audience. And by the way, I've got listeners now in South Africa I'm getting hit up with, Brazil, France, Germany. So this isn't just staying in Chicago. So I'm excited about all of this. And again, thanks to Bobby for jumping on today. And what a great conversation. That was wonderful. Of course, I don't have the guest for tomorrow because I didn't write it down. But we're going to announce that right after I get off the show. I'm going to drop that. Another great guest will be on tomorrow. And then Friday, I do know this, Dave Katzman's going to be on with his Chicago Blues and Beyond. And then our special guest that I have not been able to announce, but I'm finally able to announce, Taranzo Cannon, the blues man from Chicago, the world-renowned blues man from Chicago, good friend of mine and Dave Katzman's. He's going to be on Friday. So Taranzo's going to be on. That's going to be fun because Taranzo's going to have some great stories. You know, he's just blown up. He's been traveling the world, just incredible musician. So I cannot wait to reconnect and talk to Taranzo. I haven't seen him since I think last Blues Fest is the last time I saw him. But great guy. So he's going to have some great stories. Obviously, he's got recordings. He's on Alligator Records. So we're going to talk all about everything on Friday with Dave Katzman and Taranzo Cannon. So stay tuned. Tomorrow back here, 6 p.m., I'll get my act together. We're going to make the announcement on who's on and what's happening, and I will figure it out as well. But hopefully everybody's having a good day. Everybody's staying safe. Of course, you can see all the past interviews at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com. Check that out, ChicagoJazz.com. Thanks to Craig Pilo for the theme music as well. And as I always say, if you like what you're hearing, please like it, please share it, please comment it, tell the neighbors, tell the family, call the grandkids Monday through Friday right here, Chicago Music Revealed, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Until tomorrow, I will see you somewhere, not on the scene, on the broadcast.